Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. On Monday, Detroit Today and WDET will join organizations all around the country in celebrating MLK Day, including our annual ritual of playing the entirety of his landmark I Have a Dream speech, originally delivered right here in Detroit in June of 1963. But as we prepare for the national holiday, it gives us a little time to reflect on what Martin Luther King Jr. meant to our nation, and not simply as a civil rights leader. Really, to truly understand King is to understand how important things like voting rights, citizenship, and the health of our democracy, all things we are talking about with great intensity right now, these were things that were really important to his political activism and to his vision of our nation. For our next guest, understanding King's advocacy for radical citizenship, things like voting rights, a living wage, adequate housing, access to health care, and excellent and racially integrated education are crucial to understanding his legacy and fulfilling his mission. Peniel Joseph is the founding director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy at the LBJ School of Public Policy at the University of Texas. He's written a number of books about race in America, including his most recent book, The Third Reconstruction, America's Struggle for Racial Justice in the 21st Century. Peniel, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what do you wish people who celebrate MLK Day knew more about the man and his mission? I say all the time that this is one of the most misunderstood figures in history. There's been what I might call a Christmasification of MLK in some ways, right? Making him kind of into a Santa Claus. But that even that is not, I think, a full way to describe the depth of misunderstanding about him. We don't know him as well as we should.
No, we don't. And, you know, my previous book before this latest one was a book called The Sword and the Shield, which subtitle is The Revolutionary Lives of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. And that's a dual biography of King and Malcolm X that actually is going to probably sometime this year or next be an 8-part television series on Disney Plus. And we've been in the writer's room and doing all these things with it. And what's so interesting is that Dr. King is a revolutionary. And I think that's the thing that most people don't know, even though he's a nonviolent revolutionary. They don't know how he was influenced by Malcolm X and the radical currents that were happening and developing both globally and domestically. And they really don't see how combative a figure King actually is. You know, by the end of his life, he's no longer on speaking terms with Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson doesn't come to King's funeral. So when we think about Martin Luther King Jr., he starts off as somebody who's interested in political reform. And over time, really as early as, you can see this as early as 1963 with a letter from Birmingham Jail, where he says that white moderates and not the Ku Klux Klan and not the White Citizens Council, who are white supremacists, are the most dangerous people in the country because they refuse to stand up for justice, mm-hmm. right? And he says that in his time, you know, your guest previously was basically saying the same thing about our time, you know, what happened to 2020. And so when we think about King, I think we have to understand King is somebody who evolves over time. Now we know after, you know, 50 years of investigating his death and his life, we know about, you know, some personal shortcomings. We know about parts of the dissertation are plagiarized. But when you really look at something like Letter from Birmingham Jail, which he writes from a Birmingham jail cell and is later published, you could see that King is intellectually brilliant. He's somebody who's deeply read. He has his own insecurities over many different things because he's under so much stress for so much of his life. I mean, he's assassinated when he just after his 39th birthday. So Dr. King would have been 94 right. on Sunday.
Right.
Just so everybody understands how his life was tragically cut short. And I think people should need to understand, I mean, it's a political assassination. It's not just some random white guy who kills Dr.
Right,
King.
right.
Whatever people want to say, it's not that. Because so what King is doing is leading a multiracial movement to fundamentally transform U.S. capitalism, right? I mean, by 1967, he says the triple evils facing America at the April 4th, 1967 Riverside Church speech is militarism, racism, and basically he's talking about capitalism and consumption.
Yeah, materialism, right.
Immaterialism, yeah. And in that speech, he says America is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, but he says it's going to be a bitter but beautiful struggle to transform this country. So he remains defiantly optimistic, but he's willing to go in deeper places, really places that Malcolm had always gone into, by talking about the depth and breadth of racism and white supremacy. He looks at American history and the history of Reconstruction and why that failed. And he looks at how whites were given the Homestead Act and free land and agents to help them, and Black people were given, were lynched and segregated and super exploited even after the Civil War. And he's telling that to interviewers and journalists, sometimes live on television, who really kind of don't like this new, improved Dr. King by 1966, 67, 68. So I'd say the biggest myth about King is that there's a misunderstanding that there's not an appreciation that he's a revolutionary. And another myth, including one in my book that I criticize Malcolm X for, is a misunderstanding of nonviolence and what King meant by nonviolence.
Right. I mean that fits directly into this description that I have of the way that we have treated him, this kind of Christmasification of him, the making the nonviolence thing into something much more than what it was, and making it into some kind of neutering dynamic, I think, of his politics and his activism. I think that's maybe one of the most common misconceptions about him. I want to talk a little bit about your book, but before we get there, I want to have you tell our listeners, you know, MLK Day is a time that we have an opportunity to think more about Dr. King. What recommendation do you have for people who want to know more, understand more? Where would they start?
Yeah, you know, I think a good place to start is probably reading his final book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, mm-hmm. just to get an understanding of his thinking and of his thoughts near the end of his life. Certainly, there's going to be a number of different books, including Taylor Branch has a great book, a trilogy on King. Jonathan Eig, my friend, the writer from Chicago, has a great book on King coming out in June, I believe. And I've read that in the galleys. It's a brilliant, unbelievable book. And Jonathan wrote the great biography of Muhammad Ali, which is probably the best book on Muhammad Ali ever, a few years ago. And so there's a lot of places to start, but I would start with King's own words. You know, and if you need something shorter, I would start, there's a great book called Testament of Hope, The Essential Writings of Dr. Martin Luther mm-hmm. King Jr., mm-hmm. edited by James Washington from around 86, 87. In that book, I would read a few things. I would start with Letter from Birmingham Jail from 1963, because I think that it's just so important. It's so eloquent. And I like Letter from Birmingham Jail, too, because that's a piece of King's writing that is not ghostwritten and edited and, right. and massaged by other people. And again, I think it shows you how clearly brilliant he was. I would also read the Riverside speech from 1967. You know, there's a time when silence is betrayal. I would read Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution, which is the last Sunday sermon that Dr. King did on March 31st, 1968. on the Passion Sunday sermon at the National Cathedral. And then I finally would read the I've seen the Promised Land, the last speech. And really, you're going to get a great cross section of what King is thinking. And I would also say people should use this weekend for service and teaching and learning in the context of racial and social justice. I mean, I here in Austin, I'm on the board of my daughter's school, and we're doing the Building the Beloved Community event here. You know, I'm doing a lot of other different things, but I'm volunteering, and the whole weekend is just devoted to others, right? Yeah. So we should really think about utilizing this time to really learn and co-learn with other people, but also to do you know, acts of service that are connected to building that beloved community. And by beloved community, King said he met a community that was free of racial and economic injustice, that was free of wars, pestilence, that was free of violence, both physical violence, but, you know, political and policy of violence.
Sure.
And that includes things like what's going on in Jackson, Mississippi.
Absolutely. And the water crises, the things so, around voting.
The critical race theory hoax, all of
that.
So I think it gives us a context to be of service and to learn. Yeah. So I hope everybody takes advantage.
So I don't want to cut you off, but we are running out of time. We're going to have you back if you are willing to talk about this wonderful new book of yours, The Third Reconstruction. First of all, I love that phrase. I want to ask you about that, but we're going to have you back to talk about that. But Peniel, really great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, we will have another conversation here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM. Your Detroit NPR station.